I do not want to go back into the workplace working for somebody else. I did not want to go back to being. So there has to be a kind of fire in your belly for it if you want it to work.
Hi, and welcome to episode 90 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
Today's main topic was prompted by a question from a listener. So we're going to talk today about building a following for your art. But before we get onto that, what have you been up to this week, Alice?
The week has flown by. I have been a happy bunny this week.
Oh, good.
I have. I had a couple of complete non-negotiables, and they were being in the studio for a whole day on Tuesday and a whole day today, and I did it. Hurrah.
Yay.
And I also managed to kick in to touch a whole load of horrible organizing-y, complicated email software connection things, or things like that, which, you know, never anybody's favorite things to do, is it? But it's really good fun when you get them done.
Yeah, it feels really good. But I just have lots of those things at the moment hovering over my head.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take inspiration from the fact that it feels good when they've finally been resolved.
Yeah, it feels good. I don't know what I'm doing in the studio at the moment. I've just, you know, basically that was my commitment as per last week. Put the time in rather than worry about necessarily what you're doing. And it's fun. And actually, I left today feeling like I'm not sure what I achieved today. Likewise, on Wednesday, which was a non-studio day, I got to the end and I have a group that I kind of, report in. And I said, you know, don't feel like I did very much today, but what I did mattered. And that was, you know, some home things, looking after something for Amy, all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't a very productive day. It was just things that needed to get done. And it was a bit like that when I left the studio today. I thought, well, I'm not sure what I actually achieved today. But then I thought, well, but all of these things are now in a different place than they were at the beginning of the day, and certainly than they were at the beginning of the week. I don't know where they're going yet, but it's just giving myself real kind of license to play and just nudge all the time, just a little bit closer to what it is that I'm trying to work out on this round of painting. So, yeah, I feel free.
Good. You look really happy, actually. You look like you've been on holiday.
I washed my hair.
No, but you're smiley.
I am smiley. The other thing that I've been doing, completely not relevant to art, is I downloaded an app about not drinking so much. Not that I do think I drink that much, but it's quite, when you've got to put it in an app, how much you drink, it's quite good because it stops you having that little bit extra. But on the good news on that front, I always thought that our wine glasses were fairly large. But when I actually measured out 125 milliliters, which is a small glass, that's generally what I drink. I was thinking that I had a big glass, but turns out I don't.
Oh, I wish I could find that out. I definitely have big glasses. I have to get this app, definitely. Well, I have been away. So anybody who follows me on Instagram knows because I just shot videos constantly while I was away and put them on Instagram stories.
It looks gorgeous.
Oh, such a stunning place.
Where did you go?
It was Argyll and Bute. I don't know why it's called Argyll and Bute. People in Scotland will know, but it's two places put together into one, Argyll and Bute. So you go up from us up to Glasgow. And then you take a ridiculous windy road that takes you forever to get back down again, down a peninsula that comes down. And it's funny because when I lived in America, we'd go from New York to Philly for the day or New York to Boston. And it's like a 2.5 hour, 3 hour drive, but it's straight there on a big wide motorway. And none of this journey, a small part of this journey was straight there on a big wide motorway. But most of it was just, you know, I thought, oh, we're only, you know, 40 miles from where we're going now. And then I looked at what the sat nav said and it was like 1 hour 20 to get there.
Yeah. Oh. But that's why when you get there, it's really beautiful and there's nobody there. I looked up, did you know the population of Scotland is half the population of London?
Wow. And when you think that most of them are in Glasgow, Edinburgh, Aberdeen, then that just, I mean, the place we were, so it's a private estate. I talked to the owner, she inherited it from her dad, and it's 13,000 acres. I honestly felt like the queen, because you could come out and you were free to just go anywhere in this beautiful landscape because it was all his. And so I felt like I should have a rifle over my arm and a tweed jacket, or I should be bombing along in a Land Rover. But it was just stunning. And so wherever I walked, I didn't see anyone. And everywhere you went, it was so ridiculously beautiful that it was like a postcard. It was just, I can't believe that's in our country. I can't believe, you know, that it's so close to where we are. And not that where I live is anything horrible, but just the size of the mountains, the size of the lakes. I mean, they make the Lake District look like a little joke. And they're massive and no one's on them. There's nobody sailing boats. There's nobody doing anything. It's just all for you. So,
because it's really cold.
But it wasn't. It was gorgeous.
You were lucky then.
I know, we came back.
That week, you were lucky.
I know. It was cold on the first day. It was like Yorkshire on the first day. It was grey and drizzly. The last 2 days, it was really warm. And then we got back here and it was cold and chilly and grey and raining. And it had been beautiful there. So, yeah, lovely, lovely, lovely. But even in the misty, dark, cold, it was beautiful. That's the thing, because it just is lovely. But I really thought I could not live in a place like this.
I was just going to say, would the desolation and the lack of people not, I mean, it is beautiful to look at, but how would you feel? I mean, you're less out there with other people than I am. Yeah, I was trying to think of a nice way to put it.
Not sociable at all. As Phil said to our new neighbours after they moved in and invited us for drinks a few times, he said, "I'm really sorry, we're just not sociable. Don't take offence." And they just laughed and went, "Oh, okay." He said, "It's not you, we're just not sociable." So, no, it wasn't, the lack of people would not bother me. Fantastic. Right. In fact, I loved it. But, it's the things that people bring with them. So the fact that where I am now, it seems remote, but you could go 10 minutes in either direction and be in a town with supermarkets and conveniences and things you need. I can go to Manchester if the mood ever grabbed me in 45 minutes. It never does. But somehow the knowledge that I could is like up there. There was one tiny little town near us, 25 minutes away. And then we went to the big town, Auburn, not a big town, and slightly run down. And just, I thought, oh, well, that's it. So unless you go 3 hours to Glasgow, you know, so I don't know. I think it was too much for me. I'd be worried, where do you go to the hospital? You know, all that kind of thing. It didn't have that sense of security to it. People go there, you can tell, who just want to live remotely. Like they want to live that kind of life. And you know, their houses show that. It's just very independent-minded people go up there, I think. But very, I don't mean to Scotland, Scottish listeners. I don't mean that only people, you know, there's obviously lots of busy cosmopolitan places in Scotland. Just the area I was, you could tell that people had moved there because they wanted to be alone and survive. If they needed a hospital, they'll manage. But yeah, I loved it. And the midges were not there for us, thankfully. So I didn't see any midges.
There you go,
so.
Sam. She was all right.
Yeah, we survived. But anyway, brilliant. So I spent a lot of time thinking and reflecting and reading a long biography on Ted Hughes. And for the lady who wrote to me and said, "I keep thinking that you're talking about your tattoos project." So I read a book about Ted Hughes, not tattoos. And that was really interesting and gave me lots of ideas and links and things. So it's been nice, but I'm glad to be back. A 4-day holiday is enough for me for the next, that'll do for a few years now. I don't want to go anywhere.
Don't know. If things were other ways, I would happily go off on a 2-month jaunt around all sorts of anywhere at the moment. Right. Anyway, 4 days it is. 4 days it is. Right. What are we talking about then this
right.
week?
So this week's main topic was prompted by a question that I got on Instagram from Maureen. And it's a great question. Maureen said, "Could you discuss the challenging task of selling artwork? It's all very well to produce a good selection of work, maintain a well-designed website, upload to Saatchi or wherever.
I'm sorry, I'm just pulling faces at Saatchi as you were. Keep going.
Oh. And add the best hashtags until you're blue in the face. However, the stumbling block in my case is clearly apparent. I, like many other artists, have no great following. Building a following takes years for the average person. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I was born with a great following.
I was going to say, well, obviously I'm not an average person, so this will be really hard for me to...
So it just arrived overnight without doing anything. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It does take years.
And she's right that all those things don't mean anything without a following. You can create a lovely website. I remember with our other business years ago, we made a website. When it was finally launched, we both sat there and then Phil went, how does we get anyone to it? And we were like, oh, we just spent all the time doing the website. So yeah, being on Saatchi and using the right hashtags and building a website doesn't mean anything without a following. And it does take years to build a big following, but it doesn't take years to start attracting people.
No.
And you don't need a huge following to start seeing the results, in my experience. And I wondered, so like for me, I've been 7 years, I was looking back, with a Facebook artist page and 5 years on Instagram, although for a couple of years I really used Instagram personally. I didn't put very much art on there. And so I've done Facebook seriously for probably 5 years, Instagram seriously for 2 years. And it's taken me 2 years to build up to 10K on Instagram. And that's working really hard and posting consistently and showing up all the time and doing all the things. And even that's a little bit of advertising during course promotion time. So it is hard, and it's got harder on Instagram than I think it maybe was a few years ago. But I still think that I saw results fairly quickly. So on Facebook, and I don't mean I sold tons of paintings, but I started to get inquiries with just a few followers. Someone would say, is that for sale? When I hadn't said, or, you know, as soon as I started to build up. So how did you, let's talk about you. How did you, because you started a few years seriously before me. How did you start to build up that following? Because you weren't actually born with it. So what did you do?
Well, I first of all joined Facebook because I had to do it. I had to join Facebook in order to be part of a group for a program I was doing. And I didn't want to. And then I quite enjoyed being in a group. So I thought, well, it'll probably be a good idea to have a Facebook page. I don't have my notes with me when I started my Facebook page. But I know at the beginning, I don't know, there weren't very many people following me. I had like 40 page likes right at the very beginning on a Facebook page. I did pay to get the number of page likes over 200. I think when I was about at 120, I don't know why, somebody said it was a good idea. So I paid to get the number of page likes over 200 and haven't done that ever since then. And I don't pay that much attention to Facebook now, if I'm honest. I think I'm close to about 4,000 on Facebook now. And Instagram, again, Instagram, I started very much for me. I started on Instagram, honestly, because my old phone kept running out of storage and I kept taking all these photographs of things that I was interested in and work that I was doing. And I couldn't keep the photos on my phone because it didn't have any space. So I thought, well, I'll put them on this thing called Instagram and then I'll have this reference I could have with me all the time. If I want to go back to what I was looking at 2 months ago, it'll be there on Instagram. I didn't even know what a hashtag was. So as a result, it took me 400 posts. So if you're posting almost every day, that's almost a year to get to 400 followers. And I remember that being a bit of a tipping point, because I remember being excited about that. I've got more followers than posts now. And I just started learning about it. I started learning about it slowly. And more importantly, I think, is paying attention to what advice out there feels relevant for you, because there is a lot of talk out there. We're talking about having a great following. It's a little bit like the episode about, does it need to be big to be important in art that we did a couple of episodes ago? The same thing, like you said, with the following, is it doesn't have to be tens of thousands of people. And there's a lot of talk in marketing circles about it needing, you know, you need to have huge numbers of people. And actually, I think it gets quite hard when you get a lot of people. And I don't think people say that very often, because what happens in the early days is you really do know everybody almost. If you've gathered people around you who followed you. So in the early days of Instagram, almost everybody who made a comment, I knew them because we'd had, okay, an Instagram conversation, but I followed them back. We'd had a conversation. I can't do that with the amount of people who follow me now. It has a very different feel. But those early days of building your following is lovely.
Mm. And there's Seth Godin, who we've talked about before. He talks a lot about building the minimum viable audience. Now, he's talking about products and things, but what is the minimum viable audience? Because for the reasons you said, you can't build strong relationships with a big audience. So he tells product companies to think about what's the minimum number of people you need and can you find the smallest niche? And I think it's the same thing. And I think I think what happens is perhaps people get daunted by the idea. They look at your Instagram and see 20 odd thousand followers and they think, oh, well, she's not an average person. I can't get to 20 odd thousand. And you can, first of all, if you want to put the work in. But secondly, you might not need to. So two or 3,000 Instagram followers might be perfectly fine and might be all you need. And you can get to that.
Yeah.
But instead of, it's a bit like with a painting. If we start off thinking about the end, then we never get there because it doesn't work thinking that way. You've got to see where it goes. It's like that with this as well. I think you just have to show up every day and do the things that there's so much information online about what you need to do. That there's so much free information just on YouTube about how to build a good following on Instagram. And just do the things that, you know, that everybody says work, and they work for you just the same as they work for me and just the same as they work for Alice. They work for everybody as long as you do them.
And yeah, I mean, there are some things that might seem obvious at first that actually don't work very well. So you might think it's a great idea, for example, to use a hashtag which has a huge number of uses, like a lot of uses, millions. It's actually not. It's much better to use a hashtag that has a much smaller number of uses. I usually aim for about 150,000 uses, something like that. Because too big, A, that tends to be the hashtags that bots follow. And also your posts will just get totally lost. It tends to be too general, far too general, far too broad, far too many posts happening. So yours will just go flip, 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 flip down the feed for that hashtag way too quickly. But the most important thing is remembering that Instagram is a social platform. So it's not just about what you're posting. So it's not just about you turning up every day. And you do learn from that. So by turning up, by posting your images every day, you start to see what looks good together. You start to see what other people respond to. It's a very creative thing, building an Instagram account. It's like having a sketchbook online, I think. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels to me. It's like this record of the work that you're doing, but also you learn, you know, what works well and what doesn't work well. But remembering that it is a social thing. It's not like Pinterest, which is more like a search engine where you put things on and hope people are going to find it. You know, Instagram, people need to feel like they're getting to know you on it a bit.
Yeah, which goes to, it's vital, I really believe, in the beginning especially, and I did this religiously, to answer everyone. And I see so many people not doing this when they don't have that many followers and they don't have that many comments. And it's just, to me, it's, I know it probably wasn't meant that way, but it's arrogant to think to not answer people when you don't have that many people. Like you said last week about something else, that 40 people in a room is a lot of people. They're all individuals. If someone takes the time to say, I really love your painting, taking the time to write back, thank you very much, is part of what we must do. We must acknowledge everyone as a human.
And particularly at the early stages where you can, you know, not only that, not only answering their comment on your feed, go over to their feed, have a look, see what they're doing, like some of their posts, make a comment on some of theirs. You don't need to play the follow unfollow game. You don't need to follow somebody back just because they follow you. But, you know, when somebody follows you, if you go over, that's how you build, that's how you curate an interesting Instagram feed. And actually, we have to work at that because Instagram is a little bit mean. So even if I have followed somebody in the past, I kind of think, hang on a minute, it's not showing me their posts. So sometimes I have to go through all the people that I have previously already followed, go over to their account, teach Instagram that I am still interested by liking some of their posts, comment. Sometimes I even unfollow them in order to refollow them back immediately because that triggers Instagram. Then they start showing me their posts again. And just remember that it's like that for other people seeing your posts too. So just because they're following you, it doesn't mean to say that they are going to be seeing everything that you post. So the more that you can make your post kind of conversational and engaging, the more likely other people will reply to it. If you reply back to them, if you reply back quicker, that helps. So don't just post and then go and make dinner and ignore it for 3 hours. Post at a time when you're sitting down with a cup of tea and you're going to be there for the next 15 minutes.
So that you can really see that difference.
Yeah,
massive. You can really see it on times when I've got distracted after posting and not been able to get back to it. I really see a difference in engagement and how far it reached on Instagram.
Sometimes you do get weird anomalies though. So, I mean, I've had a couple of posts recently. I did a post where I actually didn't put any hashtags on it at all. And it still had a really good, really good reach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes it's not particularly obvious what works and what doesn't, but what are you going to do otherwise? This is the point in all of this. What are you going to do otherwise? Like your choice is, Don't do it. Or do it.
And I think one thing I would say is choose the platform. So when I started out, I was only on Facebook with my art. And Facebook I chose just because I was using it a lot anyway. And, you know, it wasn't any great strategy. I just thought, oh, that's easy to set up a page. And I've still do better on Facebook selling paintings than I do on Instagram for some reason. I don't know why, but I just have more followers on Facebook who seem to want to buy things than I do on Instagram. And that varies. That's different for a lot of other people I know. But I stuck to Facebook until I had it mastered and I had quite a decent following. And then I started focusing more on Instagram. And now I have a YouTube channel, although to be honest, I don't spend as much time as I could on that. But I never got in. I don't use Twitter. So I've never tried to be everywhere. I just tried to do what I could manage. And I think it's best if you're trying to build a following to pick one platform. Possibly you can do from Instagram to Facebook. So if you want to do, but I really would stick to one and learn how it works and really learn it and use it regularly and make yourself a good pick Instagram, be a good Instagrammer, like you said, be social, and then add another one later if you find that you're able to cope. But I think people try and do them all sometimes. I did start a Twitter and a Facebook and an Instagram when I started. It's just that the only one I used was Facebook for a while.
Yeah. And I think what's important in terms of which one that you want, I mean, they're all good for different things. Like I think Twitter can be very good for local, like if you're going to have local events and local followings, but it's just not a particularly nice place to be. I kind of only go onto Twitter to rant a little bit. Don't look at my Twitter feed at the moment. But I think it's important too that you are more likely to put the time and energy into somewhere where you enjoy being. So whether you're going to pick Facebook or Instagram, there's no point in doing it if you're kind of feeling like you're doing it under duress because you have to. So, I mean, I said rather flippantly, you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. But it kind of is true because you're either going to, if you're interested in building a following because you want to sell your work, ultimately, possibly that's what you'd be doing it for. you know, your option is you either focus totally down the gallery route, and even to be honest, galleries want you to be able to bring people to them like publishers do these days, you know, so, you know, they're going to be more interested in you if you do have a social media following and people who are already interested in your work. You can't rely entirely on galleries to do all the work for you, even if you're with a gallery. But if you're not with a gallery, then, you know, this is one of the tools that you've got in your toolbox. But let's talk about some of these other things. So maintaining a well-designed website, yes. Bear in mind that a website design is not just about how it looks, though. You've got to be really clear on what the purpose of your website is and what you want people to do when they get there. That's the biggest issue that I see with artists is that, and I think we all fall into that initially when we create a website. It just feels so good just to get a couple of paintings up, but you really need to be thinking about creating that journey for people as they come into your website and where you want to lead them, what you want them to do. And then you need to start thinking about how you're going to get people to visit it in the first place.
Yeah. And I think, like, the website and the social media accounts, I think you have to act like you've already made it. When, and I don't mean fake anything. I don't mean pretend. I don't mean lie. I don't mean say I'm a superstar artist. And I remember when I found you. So you were a couple of years ahead of me in the journey. So I found you I thought, oh my God, she has it all together. Like, look at her. She's so successful. And now that I know, I know at that point you weren't particularly financially successful at that point. You were just starting to start selling your work. I mean, you were doing great, but, you know, you weren't at the level I thought that you subsequently got to. But I thought you were because I was further back. So as far as I was concerned, you had a studio to work in that looked spacious. You had sketchbooks going. I remember you'd done a video where you were explaining that, and I saw you as someone to follow because you were professional in every aspect of how you presented yourself. You were clearly a serious professional artist, and this is what I think people don't understand. If you act like a professional, everyone will assume you are a professional, and they won't think, well, she's not selling any paintings, though. So for Maureen, who feels like she's got all these paintings piling up, people aren't going to know that. They're just going to see Maureen there busily working, sharing what she's doing, talking about her art and what she cares about. And they're going to assume some level of success. Everybody, people accept you for whatever you put yourself out to be, is what I'm trying to say. So I think that's really important on the website and in social media. In other words, not saying things like, oh, I'm sorry to bother you again, you know, just one more thing.
It's difficult, though. It is hard, that, I think, particularly if you're not used to it. And I think for a lot of people, you know, we're encouraged not to blow our own trumpet or to talk about, you know, where we've had successes. I know we've had a discussion about this recently about, oh, well, when I've sold something, should I say that I've sold it? It feels a bit embarrassing. I think I've always taken the stand of, if something's worth doing, then it's worth doing properly. And, or it's worth doing to the best of my capability right now. And I don't always finish things and I don't always get things done brilliantly, but I usually get 90% of it done to the point that I'm happy with. And I mean, I remember being, you know, quite conscious about so how the space I was working in. So when you say I was working in a studio, it was a spare bedroom at home. Yes, we're lucky to have a spare bedroom. But I do remember at one point thinking, actually, this looks a mess. When I take photographs of things, it looks a bit dodgy because I've got this crummy old carpet on the floor, which is actually a mess now because it's got paint all over it. So that's died. And all it took was getting some sheets of hardboard and painting them white. And all of a sudden, everything looked a bit better. And that helps in the way that you're photographing things. There was more light in the room. But it also helped in the way that it felt like I had committed just another little step towards my artwork and how I was doing it and how I was presenting it. And just, taking it seriously. I don't like using that word, taking it seriously, but that's what it is. It's that level of, if I'm going to do this, let's do it as well as we can.
Mm.
And I think that that's important, whether you're talking about how you're painting or whether you're talking about photographs that you're taking or whatever website you're putting it. And it doesn't mean that you have to get it perfect at the beginning, because nobody does.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing I made a note of that I see people doing wrong when they're not getting a following is they're not putting anything of interest out for people. So a common mistake I see is to put an image on Facebook or on Instagram without really any explanation, and then just put it out there, you know, like, here's my latest painting. It's 30 by 30 or whatever. And the posts that people engage with are the ones that share something of yourself. And you know this, if you think about your own, what you engage with on social media, mm-hmm. things that are interesting to you. And one common mistake is to feel like, is for artists, like I say, to either just put the image up with no explanation, or to only post when they have something to sell or something to tell you about. And that won't build a following, because people are just like, oh, there she goes again, telling me something she's got for sale. She's got another painting for sale. Some people's Instagram feed is just the painting for sale, one after another with a price. That's not going to get a following. So you have to think about it as, what will other people be interested in? Who are the people who are following me, and what do I think they're interested in? So, for example, that might be still lifes, because that's what you paint. Or it might be how beautifully representational portraits are done. So then you can start talking about how you do that. Or it might be abstract painting. You can talk about why you paint abstract or what struggles you're having. I think sharing things of interest, and what I found to be really successful is times when it's not going great. Like, we think we shouldn't share that, but times when it's not going well are the times when I've got the most followers out of the post and the most attention, because everybody wants to know.
It's all right to not be doing.
Yeah, but they want to know. Yeah. It's not, you don't just turn up, slap some paint around, create another masterpiece and leave again. They want to know that it's a job like anything else, and that it's got challenges, and that it's, and if you can be humorous about that as well. In other words, I just think being yourself.
Exactly.
Be yourself. Be completely honest. You don't have to tell everything. You don't have to say, I just flung my bucket of water across the room and screamed because it's going badly.
But people, you threw a glass through the window.
Yeah, you don't have to do things like that. But if you do, it really builds connection with other people, because everybody's thrown something at some point.
Go on.
I think I'd sum that up as, focus on other people, not on yourself. Put the focus on what you think other people want to hear about, not on what you want them to know always. You're allowed once in a while to say, here's something for sale. But if all you say is, here's something for sale, people are going to turn off. So
yeah, I'd also say there's quite a strong element of focusing on yourself in it too, in the sense that, you know, if you share, it's the same thing really, but share what you're interested in, you know, make it like a diary of your work online, because then I think for me, that takes the emphasis off having to think, oh, well, what will other people be interested in? Because we don't know that. We don't know that until we start writing posts and seeing them work and seeing where that interest is. We don't actually know what other people will be interested in, but you know what you're interested in. You know, when you've had a good day, or when you've just discovered something, or where you've spotted something, you know, on a wall, or an artist you've enjoyed, or a book you're liking, you know, that kind of feeling of enthusiasm, that's what you want. So you've got to find that in you first, and then show up with that, and to a certain extent not think quite so much about other people, because
my wording isn't correct, so I totally agree with you. What I mean though is not thinking, okay, I've got a show coming up, I want people to come to that, I've got paintings to sell, I want to get those out, what else do I need to do, thinking me
Yeah.
In that sense. So, yeah, what would be of interest to other people is what you're saying, sharing the process, share. I agree totally. But what you want, you go at it roundabout way. So by sharing interesting things and chatting and engaging and talking to other people, that gives you permission to every once in a while say, hey, I've got some paintings for sale. Yeah. Come over and have a look. Whereas just, I've got this, I've got that, I've got the other, it gets really tedious.
And just a word on Saatchi or Artfinder or all of those other kind of platforms. Again, the same thing applies really as to your website. And in fact, it's probably even harder in a way on Saatchi. There are so many people on there. It's really hard to get found. You can't just put your work up on Saatchi and expect that people are going to find it there. You need to work just as hard on your painting descriptions, on your SEO to get found, all of those kind of things on Saatchi as you have to do on your own website. And I've never really done it. I've always focused on traffic to my website. So that's what I focused on in the early days in terms of, you asked me, what did I do? Mine was blogs, images, sharing those to Pinterest. When you get something and it cycles around Pinterest, it's there forever. It's not like a social media feed that comes and goes. If you only have to get a couple of posts from a blog post that start to get picked up and reshared and repinned. And as long as you're sharing that from your website, people will come back to your website. And then it's about that journey. What do they find when they see your website? Is it inviting? Is it welcoming? Do they want to hang around? Are you doing something that they're interested in? You know, following you on social media is a lower commitment to signing up for your email list, but it all ultimately feeds in. But yeah, it does take years. I mean, we come back to this, doesn't it? Building a following takes years for the average person. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
We're all average people in that sense. Yeah. And it does take a while. But it's fun. Like, it's not...
Yeah, find the fun.
It's fun. And you do start making the sales. So it's not like you have to wait till you get to 10,000 followers on Instagram before you start making sales. The sales start coming. As long as, and this is, so we're saying share things that are of interest, don't push your own stuff. But you do have to mention from time to time that things are for sale.
Hello.
This was my mistake for a long time. I would put my artwork up, especially when I wasn't that confident in it.
Yeah.
And people would have to ask me, do you ever sell your paintings? By any chance, is that for sale? And I'd always nearly fall over, like, oh my God, somebody's interested.
But and for every person who asks, there's probably at least 30 who don't.
Who are scared to say because if they can't afford it, then they'll feel bad. And, you know, I made a note here that there was something I wanted to mention because I think what we're talking about here is so important that... Maureen's question clearly indicates she wants to sell her painting. She wants this to be a business on some level. And she's done all the right things on one side. She's made a nice website. She's listed on Saatchi. She's worked hard. But this is this second part of the business side of things is what's so important. And I am collecting survey responses from my course, and it's amazing. I mean, most of the survey responses are fantastic. I can't believe it. And there was like four people who were not happy out of so far the 500 or so that have answered. So I'm counting that as a really good win. But one of the people who, I don't know if she wasn't happy, but she was clearly wanting to make some points in her comments to me. And I don't know who she is because she was anonymous, but she said, towards the end, so on the very last day of the course, I decided to do an extra bonus on the very last day of the course. I did an extra bonus call and I gave some final advice. And then I told people they could come and join my membership site. First time I'd mentioned I'd given them an opportunity to join was after the 10-week course. But she said, I felt at that point like it was very businessy. And it made me question, is Louise a painter or a businesswoman? And I thought, that so much in that question, like, why do I have to be one or the other? Why? So there's an assumption there that if you're a painter, you don't have any kind of business sense. And if you're a business person, you can't possibly be a painter. And I think that I've said this so many times, but we have such an opportunity in this current world to sell our own work and to make our own life and our own way of doing it. And that requires a little bit of business savvy, and it's not hard to pick it up. I mean, you did not have any background of running your own business prior to doing this.
I'd done business studies for A-level.
Well, there you go. But look what you've been able to do with absolutely no business training.
Yeah.
You don't have to work in a corporation to learn this. You don't have to have had your own business before. You just have to be open to learning. And that's why I think picking one platform to start with and then digging into it and looking up, go on YouTube and watch everything you can find about Instagram until your eyes bug out. There's so much there for free.
And I think that's where people get unstuck a little bit, and you have to want it, right? You have to want it. Like, I wanted this because, you know, I had been at home with my lovely babies, who are no longer babies, but, you know, my lovely babies, and I was fed up of picking up mush off the floor and all of that kind of stuff. You know, I wanted to do something that was for me, and I wanted it to be something that grew. And, you know, yes, I was lucky. I didn't have a pressure. I didn't have to turn it into a business that was going to start, you know, paying me back a full-time salary within 2 years. I didn't have that pressure. But my choice, I knew that at some point it would have to do that. And that was the deal. That was kind of the deal between my husband and I. And it used to freak me out sometimes. He would say, well, when I stop work and you start working again, and I go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. How is that going to happen again? Because I do not want to go back into the workplace working for somebody else. I did not want to go back to be. So there has to be a kind of fire in your belly for it if you want it to work. And you've got to treat it a little bit like that, but as Louise said, I think really see it as an opportunity that you can create this to be whatever you want to be. And, you know, we have people in our group, and they are different people who are doing all sorts of different things and approaching it different ways to make it work for them. Like, so some people are really interested in teaching, some people aren't, some people have got high, like they want high financial demands back from it, others are happier for it to be a lower level. You get to choose this, but you do have to know that if you are wanting it to be a higher level, you've got to put that work in, and that is also going to bring a whole load of other stuff that is going to take you away from your painting.
Yeah.
So, you know, there does have to be a degree of being a little bit realistic in this, but it comes down to still your choice. And every time where I think, oh, I've got to do such and such, you know, I'd just much rather be in the studio painting. And then I kind of think, but look what this gives you, you know, and all the times that you sit down and you think, oh, I've got all those images, I've got to retitle them and load them up to my website, and this is really dull. Yeah, but it's so outweighed by the thrill when somebody buys something, and that you've made something from nothing that didn't exist in the world before. And I understand that it, at the beginning, it's really frustrated, but you've got to have the confidence in yourself and the follow through, and then it starts to grow.
And we have seen it over and over again, especially during lockdown, with people who had said, the common thing is, I'm not a tech person. I'm just not a tech person, which is such a cop-out, because none of us under the age of 30 are naturally tech people. We've all had to, you know, you don't born as a tech person, just like you're not born with a big following. You have to wrestle with it. And it frustrates me a bit when I hear people say, I'm not a tech person, so I'm not going to do that. Because I think about the nights I've sat up till 1 a.m, tearing my hair out, going, why is this thing on WordPress not working? And you have to do it. But like you say, that means you have to want it. And I think from that question that Maureen does, so then you have to say, well, how much and what? How much do I want to put into it? How much time do I want to put into this? Because you don't want to make yourself miserable. So if you're really not going to enjoy the whole selling side of it, but set yourself little goals and things to do. You know, I don't mean goals even in how many followers so much as after you've done your research on Instagram and you know what kind of things you need to be doing, set yourself little targets of what to do. I think that rather than watching the numbers or the sales at first, we talked about this last week, actually, watching watching the numbers and the sales can be depressing at first, but watching the steps that you said to yourself you're going to do being knocked over like dominoes.
You have control over that part, what you do. So is your target, is it going to be, you know, I'm going to post 3 really good posts this week. Am I going to see, like, you know, what's the post? And you can look, if you've got a business account, you can look on Instagram, you can look at your posts by like the most number of comments. See which is the post that's had the most comment previously. Set yourself a little challenge this week. You don't tell anybody, but you're going to do 3 really good posts this week. You're going to make them really interesting. You're going to see if you can beat your last previous amount of comments that you get back. Now, you know, the likelihood is that that is then going to get seen by more people and get more followers and all of those kind of things. But you're not setting out to get followers. You're setting out for really focusing on what it is that you're posting and how it can be interesting. And those little, like, little mini challenges, it's the only way to do it. Because if we all knew right at the beginning, if you sat me down 5 years ago and told me everything that I would have to do to get from that point to this point, I would have crawled under the duvet and never come out again. And I don't say that to be discouraging, because I love it and I'm here. And most of the time I've loved every step along the journey, but I've only done it bit by bit.
Yeah, it just would be so daunting if you saw it all in a big list.
Horrendous. Right.
Yeah. So
it still is sometimes. I still have days, you know, I still have things on a huge, great big list that I haven't got to, but I'm one person. Like, I can do as much as I can do. And this thing that I said at the beginning of, like, it felt like I didn't do much today, but I did what was important. That's probably where I would challenge you. It's like, are you focusing in the areas where it's actually going to make a difference for you? And there are a lot of balls to juggle. We need to make the work. We need to bring the following. We need to have the website. There is a lot. It does take time, and there is no getting away from that. I'm really sorry.
Yeah. But I think what's reassuring for Maureen and anyone else who feels like this is that the implication in her question is for people like you, it's easier, but for average people, it's harder. And the cheery thing about what we're saying is, no, it's the same for everyone. Mm. It is the same for everyone. Unless you happen to be, I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg's sister or something, and you get some special Facebook treatment. I don't know what that would be.
Or if you're your favorite, Gary Vee, with a team of people. So I saw something and
that for himself.
He did it all for himself at the beginning, and he is a work maniac. I am not.
Yeah.
He is, I don't know, he must be on some kind of scale somewhere. But, now I saw the other day, it said he puts out 100 bits of content a day or something.
Because he has a whole, now he has a whole team. But when I first followed him on Twitter, because that's when I did use Twitter back in way before my art days, it was just him working at his dad's wine store and doing it all himself. And he was just Twitter, Facebook, I think, you know, Vine, whatever that was in those days. There were a few things in those days. But he was just doing it like we do. And so, again, an average person who built up something massive. Now, yeah, I don't think any of us are quite that much of a workaholic, but...
But it's just the same thing, isn't it? Just keep showing up. But also, I think this thing of showing up with something that you enjoy doing is really important, because, A, you're going to keep doing it anyway, regardless then. But also, people know, like, we all have really good bullshit radars. We know when somebody's not enjoying. If we turned up to do this podcast every week and we really didn't like it and it was really hard work and arduous, you guys would hear it and you'd all stop listening, because it would be really dull to listen to. We know you're only here for the outtakes.
Yeah.
But the point is, like I've said this before, we'd probably be here still, even if not very many people were listening to you. Because it's a fun check-in.
Yeah.
It serves all the purpose, like all the things we're supposed to do, regular content, da, 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 blah. But it's still something that's fun. So if you can find something that's fun that you would like to commit to and just keep following through, just keep doing it. Review it by all means. If it's not working, do you want to switch something up, change it around? But it does just take that, just flow, and then enough time to let it build, honestly.
And it's fun. We'll leave it on that. It's fun. It can be fun. So moving on to what's inspired or what have you enjoyed this week?
Well, like I say, I've probably quite enjoyed this app because it stopped me having that extra glass of wine. I really enjoyed one night where I went to bed at a normal bedtime and I went to sleep and I woke up at normal sleep time. That sounds revolutionary, doesn't it? But my goodness me, what a difference it made to the next day that I actually had a really good, sound, solid night's sleep.
I can't remember the last time I had one of those.
It's quite good.
Yeah.
I don't know. And also it wasn't on a not drinking night either. And it wasn't on, I don't know. So it doesn't seem to relate to anything, but that was really good. But what has really inspired me this week is, Great British Bake Off is back.
Oh, is it? No, I didn't know it was back.
It's back. It was back on Tuesday and we can't watch it because it's on late. And Amy says that she has too much homework and, she can't watch it. So we have to record it so that you can fast forward through the ads. And it's also too long to watch in one go. So we have to break it down and watch it over the next couple of nights. But they've got Matt Lucas in it. Do you remember who used to?
Oh, I like him. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he was so funny. It was so, they had a bit at the beginning and the whole thing was so funny and they did it brilliantly. And I just think TV, in terms of what's inspired and what's impressed, it's different groups of people. TV and entertainment people who are really trying to do things differently. So there's somebody on the radio this morning. They're playing in a band from three different locations, playing live on the radio. Really impressive. The amount of technology that people have had to do and alternative thinking to get that kind of thing happening. So Great British Bake Off, they asked everybody to come and self-isolate and go into quarantine for 2 weeks, including all the presenters, so that they could film it like normal Bake Off, because everybody is together and they hug each other. What a commitment from the production team, from the presenters, from everybody taking part. And as a result, it's just got that fantastic, fantastic feel to it still. So really, really enjoyed that. Going to have to start making cakes and eating them a lot. And teachers is the other one. I think the amount that teachers have had to modify and adapt and are still doing it. Did something with Amy on a school thing the other day. And it's just so impressive. And also the nice thing about it is actually we do get to see the chinks in people's armor. So, you know, this was a techie thing and it went wrong and we were supposed to be teaching to, and it wasn't working and the Zoom link wasn't opening up and it said she's on another meeting. So we had another computer with another Zoom link up and then one teacher popped up and then the other one popped up. We had two of them on. I mean, it was funny, but as a result, it was a much better meeting than perhaps a more professional version would have done. So I think that the fact that there are some little silver linings in this, the way that perhaps people aren't quite doing things a little bit differently. There you go. That's my week. What about you?
Good. So mine was this biography that I'm reading at the moment while I was away of Ted Hughes is beginning to, all along of doing these paintings, I think part of why I got stuck with them for a while was I couldn't work out really why I was doing it or fully what put the links together in my mind of what it was I wanted to say about them and what was inspiring about them. And the other thing, and so the biography is really helping with that. I'm really starting to get to grips with it. And the other thing that I love, it's connections. It's all about connections that we make in our brain. This is what I absolutely love about creativity. So the other thing I've been stuck on with it, I think, all along is, but what's the end result? Like, do I, when people are asking, can I buy that? Do I say yes now? Or do I wait for some mythical show? Or do I put the show on myself? Or do I approach somebody? Or I couldn't think what the outcome could be. And two things happened last week. One was I had a conversation with another artist for my membership site. And something she said kind of lit a spark.
Yeah.
And then I know. And I even told her as we were talking, she said, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'd also discovered this video on YouTube, which I will link to in the episode notes, of Ira Glass. And many people will have heard of Ira Glass only because he had a famous quote about the gap between what you want and what you can achieve. But Ira Glass is actually a radio host and producer in America. He created this show that's really innovative, or was really innovative, called This American Life. It was his idea, his show. He ran it for years and years, and now it's a podcast. And in this video on YouTube, he's discussing creativity and finding your own creative voice. And he's talking about how he invented a way to be on the radio because one didn't exist. He wanted to do documentaries about ordinary people. And there was no way to do that. He did documentaries about famous people or successful people or scientists. He didn't do documentaries about ordinary people. And he said it took him years to figure out a way to do documentaries about ordinary people that were interesting. Now, everybody copies Ira Glass. So many podcasts copy his style of storytelling. But he invented that. And he says in this video about finding your creative voice that I think you should invent the thing that's perfect for you. Which goes back to what you were saying about all the artists in the group. And those two things came together and I had the perfect idea. But I'm not going to say what it is because it's one of those ideas that
you suggest.
You don't want it to dissipate in the air if you say it out loud. Mm-hmm. But I totally know how I'm going to show these paintings. I totally know what I'm going to do with them. And it's really exciting. And I'm inventing my own thing. I don't know of anybody else who's done this in quite this way. So thank you, Ira Glass. And thank you to Gwyn Penny for the two of them inspiring this idea for me. So, yeah, I'm super inspired by it. It's given me new energy and I'm now working on the paintings I've been working on today as soon as I got back and bringing things together and knowing how I'm going to show them and is changing the way I'm working on them. So
giving you that boost, isn't it?
Really exciting.
I think that's also worth mentioning as well, is that it kind of goes like that. You know, there's a bit of trudgery. And then you have something that gives you a little boost and a little breakthrough. But, you know, that came about because you're voicing this issue or the concern or the discussion around it. And it's that connection and the unexpected connections and also that slight bloody-mindedness, really.
I'm not giving up on this. And I'm just going to be surrounded by these things until something makes sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm excited. Lovely. And I will share in all good time. So that's it for us this week. Since we've been talking about building a social media following, how about coming over and finding Alice and myself on Instagram, if you haven't already, and following us. So you can find me at LouiseFletcher_art, and you can find Alice at Alice Sheridan Studio.
And it will be a bit more interesting now that I'm back in the studio rather than in this weird summer limbo. I've got 6 big ones on the go at the moment. Whole bunch of small ones that I started again. I've got 7 new untouched canvases.
Got a lot of work to do, Alice.
Don't know what it's going to be for.
Okay, everybody.
I'm not thinking about that. Seriously, I'm just like, whatever the hell. I'm just going to just crack on and do it anyway.
That's it for us, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye. What we need every week is a joke.
No, we don't need a joke.
We need to bring a joke.
You don't need a joke. Jokes are not funny.
I know a really funny one, but you need to be able to see it. What work on a podcast? I only know one joke. It's the only one I've ever remembered my whole life.
What we need is a little secret something right at the end that is, I don't know.
What do they call it in video games? They call it an Easter egg. When you have to go find something. that's hidden. So you'd have to find it in the outtakes.